Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Ann Ball, Pete Musto, Dorothy Gundy, and Marcia James. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Jill Robbins, along with Adam Brock, will present this week's lesson in everyday grammar. Brian Lynn has our first story.
U.S. President Barack Obama visited Orlando Thursday to meet with survivors and family members affected by the worst mass shooting in American history. Obama met privately with relatives at Amway Center, a stadium not far from the gay nightclub where a lone gunman opened fire early Sunday, killing 49 people and injuring 53 others. Vice President Joe Biden also traveled to Orlando. In remarks after the meetings, Obama said the families are feeling grief beyond description.
Today, the Vice President and I told them on behalf of the American people that our hearts are broken too, and that we stand with you, and that we are here for you.
Obama said it was difficult for him to console family members after a violent tragedy.
So today, once again, as has been true too many times before, I held and hugged grieving family members and parents, and they asked, why does this keep happening? And they pleaded that we do more to stop the carnage. They don't care about the politics. Neither do I.
Obama repeated his earlier statements that the Orlando attack was both an act of terrorism and an act of hate.
This was an attack on the LGBT community. Americans were targeted because we're a country that has learned to welcome everyone, no matter who you are or who you love.
Obama also pledged that the government would be relentless against terrorist groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda.
We are going to destroy them. We are going to disrupt their networks and their financing and the flow of fighters in and out of war theaters. We're going to disrupt their propaganda that poisons so many minds around the world.
But he noted that both the Orlando attack and the San Bernardino shooting that killed 14 people were lone wolf attacks without direct involvement from foreign terror groups. He added that these kinds of attacks will take more than good military tactics and intelligence to prevent. I'm Brian Lynn.
The United States Department of Defense developed some of the technology that led to the Internet. Defense Department workers built what they say was the first workable model for the Internet many years ago. The goal was for U.S. universities and researchers to share information. Later, the goal became data sharing between the U.S. and other countries. Because of that work and others, the world is now more connected than ever. There is more information stored online than any of the internet's creators could have imagined. But that also means it is harder than ever to keep important data safe from criminals. Steve Welby is the Defense Department's Chief Technology Officer. He spoke with VOA about some of the issues the department faces in protecting its information from cyber attacks. Welby says the growth of data available on computer systems is both an opportunity and a challenge. Almost everything the Department of Defense does involves some kind of software, he notes, and if a hacker attacks a small weakness in a program, it can bring down an entire wall of cyber defense. That is why he believes that defending cyberspace may be just as important as defending air, land, sea, and space. But that kind of work is not always easy. James Lewis is Strategic Technologies Program Director at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says the tradition of using simple band-aid solutions to correct small problems in cyber defense is a mistake. Lewis says there are other militaries with computer experts that are as good as those in the United States. He says hackers will eventually find ways through virtual walls if they have time and resources. It's not so much that our defenses are weak, Lewis says. It's just that they are hard to defend against. Welby says the Defense Department is trying to develop systems that are easy to defend instead of turning to products from the marketplace. Lewis says one problem the department faces is that some of its computer systems are very old, and old systems are hard to protect. He says within 3 years, 5 years, they, opponents, know every bug, they know every opening, they know every vulnerability. But help could be on the way. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter is working with technology developers who may be able to improve defenses in the U.S. Carter met last week with Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX and product developer of Tesla Motors. I'm Ann Ball.
Many people in Europe see Islamic State or IS militants as the biggest threat to their nations, a Pew Research Center study finds. Climate change is the second largest concern of Europeans. The arrival of refugees from Iraq and Syria in Europe is the third most important issue, the center says. Researchers spoke with people living in 10 European countries. Only 17% of those questioned feel the self-declared Islamic State is a minor threat. Only 3% said the group is no threat at all to their nation. Terrorist attacks in France and Belgium over the past year have put terrorism at the top of the list of concerns of Europeans. Security remains high across the continent since the attacks. 32 people were killed in March when bombers attacked the airport and a train station in Brussels, the Belgian capital. The Islamic State said it carried out the attacks. The group also claimed responsibility for a series of deadly attacks in and around Paris last November. A total of 130 people were killed. The new study found most Europeans do not feel that military spending should be increased. Many fear that increasing military force to fight terrorism only leads to more hate, which will increase violence, the Pew Center said. The study also found that a majority of Europeans want the EU to become more active in world events. Close to 74% of Europeans think the EU should have more influence. Even in Britain, 55% of respondents said the EU should take a more active international stance in the coming years. British voters will decide in a special election next week whether the country should continue as an EU member. Other studies, including one released by the Pew Research Center last week, show that many Europeans may want to follow Britain's example and possibly leave the EU. I'm Pete Musto.
Technology companies and rights groups are preparing to fight the Federal Bureau of Investigation again over privacy rights. The federal government and technology companies have argued many times about the meaning of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The amendment says, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause." U.S. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, who died in 1941, called privacy the most comprehensive of rights and the right most valued by a free people. The latest dispute about privacy is about the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, or ECPA. That law took effect 30 years ago. It limits the government's access to electronic communications and other information. Since the act was passed in 1986, there have been many changes in technology. The act is now considered outdated by many people. Congress has been considering ways to change the law to protect the privacy of people when they use the internet. At the same time, Congress wants to give government agencies the power they need to enforce laws and protect the public. Last week, the Senate Judiciary Committee began considering an amendment to the ECPA. It would expand the government's ability to collect electronic information. The amendment would permit the government to use a National Security Letter, or NSL. When the government uses an NSL, it does not need an order from a judge. The amendment would let the FBI demand a person's internet search history and internet protocol address. This would permit the agency to see what websites a person visits and how much time is spent on a site, as well as where the internet user is. The agency would not need to get the approval of a judge before getting this information. The FBI says the ECPA permits the agency to request such information, although it only refers directly to telephone records. FBI Director James Comey has said the amendment is needed to clear up any confusion about what information the agency can gather without a judge's permission.
He says the agency's work has been slowed in a very, very big and practical way. But large technology companies and civil liberties groups wrote to Congress recently opposing the amendment. They said the amendment would dramatically expand the ability of the FBI to get sensitive information about users' online activities without court oversight. Representatives of Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Human Rights Watch, the American Civil Liberties Union, and other groups signed the letter. These organizations are sharply critical of government's use of national security letters. The letters often ban companies from telling users that their information is being gathered. The organizations believe that the letters give too much power to the government. They also make it difficult to predict what the government may ask for next. Comey has said the amendment is the agency's top legislative goal. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Children whose parents are immigrants to the United States live between two worlds, the U.S. and their parents' homeland. It is not easy for them to deal with the demands of both worlds, and they must balance those demands with the pressure of being in high school. One such student is Aaron DeRobb, who lives in Northern Virginia near Washington, D.C. His family came to the U.S. from Afghanistan. Aaron says he deals with the stress in his life by playing basketball.
Oh my goodness! I'd say basketball's a great deal to do with the person I am right now.
Aaron is one of seven children in his family.
I'm probably competitive because of my brothers, you know, they're always pushing me to do this and like, we play a lot of games when we're younger.
Aaron says he wants to be like his older brothers.
They're your role models, and so when I saw them playing at a young age, I was just so excited to start playing with them, and when I did, basketball is the best sport.
Aaron is completing his second year at James Madison High School in Vienna, Virginia. The school has students from many countries.
I'm not the only one from another country, so like they're all not like looking out on me. We're all like together on this.
Gregory Hood is the head of James Madison High School.
One of the great things about having the diversity of students from all around the world is that the perspectives those students bring, the experiences they bring, it adds value in the classroom, it adds value on the field, off the field, anywhere where they are. They learn from each other in different ways, see different perspectives from each other, and I really think that helps them to grow individually.
Aaron says being different is not difficult, and he says he is happy his family is Afghan.
Wherever your parents come from, that's where you're from, that's where your heritage is from. And so my parents were born and raised in Afghanistan, so therefore I believe that I'm Afghan.
Quiana Dang is a Vietnamese American. She, like Aaron DeRobb, is a successful high school student. Quiana attends Marshall Academy at the George C. Marshall High School in Falls Church, Virginia. She is part of a program called STEM, short for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. The program prepares students for high-tech jobs.
Coming to Marshall Academy has changed my life because as a freshman, I didn't know anything about technology.
Quiana is now a junior at George Marshall. Later this year, she will begin her final year at the school.
I think that the way that we're learning right now in high school is building up for us to get into more career-oriented types of learning.
The STEM program is offered to students throughout Virginia. Jason Simeon teaches at Marshall Academy. He says Quiana forces him to be a better teacher.
Quiana is a great character. So it's really quite rewarding to have a student like that, because she does push me to do a better job and to try and bring a little bit of style to the classroom.
Quiana says the school has helped her think about what she wants to do when she completes her schooling.
Marshall has given me so many opportunities to go into fields that I've wanted to look at, with actual career experiences like technology, STEM, and cybersecurity, my favorite.
Quiana has many friends, and she helps her classmates. She has won awards for her work. She wants to study at Kyoto University in Japan. Until then, she will continue to make her school and its STEM program proud of her. I'm Marcia James.
This is What's Trending Today. This year is the 100th anniversary of the U.S. National Park Service. Millions of people from across the United States and around the world will spend part of this summer visiting one or more of America's national parks. One place to enjoy the great outdoors is Yellowstone National Park in northwestern Wyoming and parts of two other states, Idaho and Montana. Yellowstone is the country's first national park. It is also one of the most visited and most recognized wilderness areas. Yellowstone has found itself in the news a lot this year. The park has seen several incidents and accidents involving humans. Many of the events have been reported on social media. Last month, a visitor to Yellowstone put a baby bison in his car because he thought it looked cold. Park officials later asked wildlife experts to kill the baby bison. They said its mother and other bison rejected the animal because of human contact. Then, on June 7th, a 23-year-old visitor fell into an acidic hot spring after leaving a marked walkway. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. This week's Everyday Grammar looks at how to use the modals may, must, and might. Modal verbs, called modals for short, are auxiliary verbs that express a speaker's attitude and the strength of that attitude. There are about 17 modals in English. They have multiple meanings and sometimes overlap in ways that are confusing to English learners. Today, we will look at how we use these modals to express how certain or sure you are of something. Grammar expert Betty Azar explains that these modals tell us how sure speakers are about what they are saying. A person who is 100% sure uses the verb be, as in, I am sick. If they are mostly sure, say 95%, they will use the modal must, as in, I must be sick. When speakers are about 50% sure, they will use the modals may, might, or could, as in, I may be sick, I might be sick, I could be sick.
Might is used as the past form of may. For example, I may take more pictures. This is a direct quote.
She said she might take more pictures. This is reported speech.
Notice how may changed to might. Modals change to a past form in reported speech. Yesterday, we had a staff meeting. I looked around the room and noticed my coworker Anna was not there. I asked, "Where's Anna?" and got three answers from my coworkers. Jonathan answered,
"Oh, she may be making a video in the studio."
Kelly said, "She might have stayed home today." Adam told us,
"She called me to say she was doing an interview at the Capitol this morning. So she must still be working over there."
In this conversation, you can see a change from may to might. May shows the speaker is not sure in the present moment.
She may be making a video.
May changes to might to express a possible state in the past.
She might have stayed home.
Finally, must expresses a strong certainty.
She must be working there.
People today do not always follow these rules about present and past tense for may and might. You will hear both words to express the same degree of certainty. English speakers still express strong certainty in phrases like, "It must be love." Listen for the word might in this song by The Cars. By using might, the singer is expressing about 50% certainty.
Now let us look at how we express certainty about the future. My friend Andy has a test next week. He has studied very hard for months. I told him, "You will do well on the test. Don't worry." I believe with 100% certainty that Andy will pass the test. On the other hand, Carrie, who has to take the same test, just began studying last week. I warned her, "You might not do well on the test. You should study more this weekend." I am not so sure that Carrie will pass. In fact, I doubt it. I express that future possibility with might. The idea of possible future events lets English speakers use may to talk about hopes. You will see may on greeting cards and in prayers or religious writings. A quick look at Google Ngrams shows that few people are using may in this way. Now, it is much more common to hear, "I hope that."
The group Celtic Woman sings of their wishes in May It Be.
May it be an evening star shines down upon you. May it be as darkness falls, your heart will be true.
Traditional poems and prayers also use may to express positive sentiments. This is part of an old Irish blessing. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind always be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. With that in mind, the Everyday Grammar team says, may you find our articles useful. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Adam Brock.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.